Hey, this is Heath Padgett. Welcome to the RV Entrepreneur Podcast, episode 206. The RV Entrepreneur is a podcast for nomadic entrepreneurs and crazy people who decide to go live on the road in an RV, or people that have just chosen an unconventional lifestyle. Today's episode is one of the ones that I had recorded earlier this year before COVID threw off plans, and I'm excited to be able to release it today because of all the businesses and people that I've had on this podcast, this is probably one of the most turnkey businesses of anybody that I've spoken with. Obviously, it took time to set up, but we're going to talk about how to manage multiple vacation rentals remotely. After immigrating with his family from Israel, Erez was really just kind of disenchanted with the idea of living in suburbia, like a lot of us. One winter, he and some friends went to Destin, Florida for a vacation where the home rental owner shared really just how easy it was to make money renting a beach house in Florida. Who would have thought? Erez was pretty intrigued, so he decided to give it a shot and buy a house, and then another house, and then one more. And now he and his wife actively manage four vacation rentals in Destin while they RV full-time. He even gets photos of his properties texted to him by his cleaners so he can manage landscaping and home details from 1,000 miles away. In this episode, we cover quite a bit, such as how one house can bring in $100,000 per year, how to calculate what you can charge for nightly plus cleaning fees, what yield management is and how does it affect bookings, and why Erez doesn't use management companies or channel managers to run his home rentals remotely. Before we get into today's episode, just a quick word from today's sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by ID Plans, and it's actually less of a sponsorship than it is really an opportunity. ID Plans is a software and service company based in Tampa, Florida that provides solutions for property managers. Over the past 20 years, ID Plans has been able to hire a number of full-time RVers to help survey commercial properties, and they are looking to hire 3 to 5 additional teams over the next couple months. Here's a clip from Carolyn, who has been traveling with her husband across the country working with ID Plans.
Me and my husband have been traveling full-time together since 2016. The whole time we've been on the road, we were always looking for a job to do something along the way to make some money, but still be able to have our freedom. We tried several different work camping positions, and we realized that was not a good way to make money. It was a great way to meet people, but the money was just not there. So we stumbled across ID Plans about a year and a half ago. And since we've worked for the company, it has changed our lives. We love working for ID Plans. We get to set our own schedule and we get paid to travel across the US. It's such a great opportunity.
Over the last few years, I've seen a lot of companies hire RVers for different types of short and longer term jobs. And I can honestly say that this is one that almost immediately after getting trained, you can make a near full-time income while also still having another side hustle or business to do on the road. You'll receive training for their software, be able to park your RV right on the job sites, and run the entire operation from your RV. If you want to learn more, you can send an email to rvjobs@idplans.com. That is rvjobs@idplans.com. All right, let's get into it with Erez. Erez, thanks for being on the podcast, man.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
It's fun. We started this episode actually online, and I've never transitioned. when we jumped on, I was like, well, we're only 20 minutes away from each other. It'd be fun if we could just do this in person. You're like, "How? Yeah, well, let's just come on over." And so now we're here in person drinking wine. This is so much better than Skype anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So the first question I have, because this is always kind of fun to hear different people's perspective on how they answer this, is when you meet somebody now, like how do you, if you meet somebody and like you're hanging out at the beach across the street, because we're in Destin, and somebody's like, "So what's your story, Erez? Like, how would you tell your story?"
We usually we start off with like, "Hey, we full time travel."
And nice, that's a good start. Yeah, strong start.
It's piques everyone's interest. And people, I haven't met anyone that wasn't like, what do you mean full-time travel? How do you do that? And they ask you, you know, the obvious questions, how you can do it, blah, blah, blah. But it's always a fun starter. And I think this is what we feel define us right now. Mm. Like if I want something people to know about me, it's definitely that we full-time travel. Not just because we want to brag about it, just because we truly love it. It's our life. We feel it like it's a way of life. So we don't, I actually think saying full-time travel doesn't make it justice. It just probably full-time, you know, RV living, traveling, because we don't just travel. Sometimes we just sit, you know, in places and just having fun with other families and other friends. And we just enjoy that transient life, I'd say. So you can just move on and change and see different places and meet different people as opposed to just being in one place.
Yeah.
So I actually think most people should do it. So I'm like, yeah, I actually want to promote it. We love talking about that.
Yeah. Whenever, like 5 years ago, if you could think of like a normal day in your life, like what were you doing 5 years ago? Was like a typical day.
I was always kind of entrepreneur. So my days were flexible, but definitely, you know, I surely had to work, you know, the regular 9 to 5. So she would wake up, usually take the kids to school or whatever. And I would just, you know, wake up, go on a computer, do stuff, emails, whatever. And usually go on meetings, meet some people around. And then, you know, I would wait at home for the kids to come from school. It was comfortable. It was nice. But I mainly was planning what I'm going to do, you know, in the evening or the weekend, you know, how I'm going to host people or what to do with the kids. But it was, for me, it was also very boring, very repetitive. So especially these days, you don't have much fun things to do with kids. You know, in a regular settings, because they come home from, you know, school at like 3 something, because we didn't homeschool before we left. They just went to we actually tried a lot of different schools, but they went to school, and it was just they come back and then they eat some lunch, whatever, and then you either take them to their activities, you know, I did gymnastics, I did other things, but then you kind of try to just pass the time. And then it's 7, whatever, you do dinner, hang out a little bit, and they go to bed. And then the next day, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So for me, it was always very boring. although, relatively, I didn't have a 9-to-5 job, so I could do my own thing. But still, I felt like it's not that you can just call your friend at 10 a.m. and like, yeah, let's have coffee. Because most people do have stuff to do or jobs or places to be, same in the afternoon or even so during the day. It was also like, even if you have a little bit of time, you don't have much people to spend it with. So that was I was missing.
At what point did you guys start thinking about maybe doing something different, and how did RVing enter the picture as like a potential solution for that?
So I think we always thought to, because we moved to the US from Israel. So we did a big move once, but we always felt like we want to do it again. So move to Australia or move to just because we actually, a lot of people, you know, when they immigrate or they move even to a different city, it's hard for them, but it wasn't hard for us. It was exciting. It was, again, I think like we go to a new place, you see different culture, different things. We are excited about doing new things. There's some people that don't like it, I know, but we are. So we always thought about, okay, let's wrap it up here and do something else. But we had a very comfortable life, which is, it's something that is kind of hard to leave. You know, say, oh, I'm already, you know, I have my friends, I have my groups. I you know, we're comfortable where we're at. We liked Atlanta where we lived. And we also had the immigration thing. So we were waiting to get our American citizenship. So you have to stay here in the United States. You can't just move. So if you move, then all the effort, which was a lot of effort, is kind of... And we still don't have it. We'll get it this year, hopefully. But so we thought, okay, this immigration process, we don't want to leave the United States because we want to be citizens. We want to have the option to live here all our lives. But we still wanted to do something different. So once we realized, you know, probably moving to a different country right now, it's not, you know, a permanent option at least. Then we were like, okay, how we make this life exciting? You know, how we do something different? And so that was one thing. And the other thing was actually the education. Because I'm always loved education. I'm very interested in it. And I was super frustrated with the... the education options people have. And I do believe schools these days, even the very good ones, are not good for our kids, for my kids. Yeah, you know, I don't care about other people. I do care about them, but yeah. Not like you can still decide what you want to do with them. And I didn't feel like in that setting where we lived in Atlanta that I could homeschool the kids. And that was selfish thing. It was basically like, I'm going to be so bored and there's nothing to do around with other kids that I can't homeschool them at home. Because even when I was at home, actually being more of the dad, the stay-at-home dad, I'll call it, although I had a job. But, you know, kids came back to school. I had to ask my wife to text some of her friends to see what they're doing, because moms are very not friendly. Just kidding. So it was. I just felt like, what? We're gonna wake up. We're gonna do some stuff at home, and then what? I don't believe. So the reason that I believe schools needs to be something different is because I don't believe you can learn what you need to learn for this life and the future from just the computer or just books. You need people skills. You need to be able to change and move, because the future with our kids will live in a world that if you cannot change what you do, change where you live, change, you know, be adaptable, fast learner, it's not going to be a very nice life for you. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what the core of the things that I want my kids to have is that ability to, you know, make friends, find solutions to issues, to problems, know different places, have the ability to say, okay, this place doesn't work for me, boom, I'm just gonna go there without the fear of change. Mm-hmm. And all that. So even just being homeschooled is not enough, because you don't get that from just sitting at home all day. Mm-hmm. And I know you can do some, you know, activities with other homeschool kids and whatever, but it wasn't what I was looking. And also, at least where we lived, a lot of it was American suburbia. Mm-hmm. Everybody to themselves, no kids outside. Everybody are so scared, you know. Mm-hmm. So we don't like that. So what can we change? And then my brother actually rented an RV and did a trip to Florida, and we went to meet them. We just did around Florida for a couple of weeks in our car, and we went to that. First, we saw this RV and like, this is, wow, this is really something. You know, yeah. It's not like an RV you think about in your head. It's not like it's cramped space, whatever. And then we also saw the campgrounds. We're like, man, this is nice. You know, there's nice campgrounds and people outside and kids on their bikes. And I'm like, man, it's something. Mm-hmm. And then we started looking into it, and then we surely booked a weekend somewhere in an RV. So we basically went on RV share. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even rent the RV to drive in it. It's just one person just put it in a campground, and we just went there for the weekend.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal. We loved it. The kids loved it. We loved the space, even the, you know, the whole. And then we're like, let's do it. And so we decided, I think it was December, a couple of years ago. And then we just said, we're just going to let the kids finish the year. So wait until the end of May and we'll hit the road.
Yeah.
And this is what we did. We just found an RV and bought it in March and kind of surely, you know, told our company, and we had the houses we have in Destin, the vacation rentals, that we, you know, said, hey, it's good enough, at least for now. Let's do it. And then we left. And actually only in July, because I was flipping houses at that time.
Yeah.
We had one project that kind of took a little bit longer. So we stayed. And we actually already rented our house. We had to leave our house. And we rented it just because it was a good investment, not because we thought we're going to ever come back or something like that.
Yeah. So you were flipping houses at the time. I know you've had like a lot of different businesses because we've had a little bit of time to hang out before this, but you were flipping houses and then you guys ended up buying some in Destin because I know you like visited this area, right? And you liked it.
So 6 years ago, we went on a Christmas vacation in Destin and we rented a house with four other families and all of us were little babies. And it was raining nonstop and it was miserable because it was five families with full of babies and it was, you know, you can't go outside. And so we just, I always was interested in real estate and I was talking with the owner of the vacation rental that we rented. And I try to talk with people all the time, wherever I go, interested in what they do, how they do it, where it was just, I love everything, like every business or something that you want to tell me about, I'll listen. I just, I'm interested. Maybe not for long, you know, but for at least the beginning, I'm like, oh, that looks very interesting. This is why I did different, all kind of different businesses in life because I'm interested. I'm doing something, you want one thing, and then I'm like, oh, this is interesting too. So the guy just, he was very open and honest with us, and he kind of gave us the chunk, you know, the main idea over the numbers, how much he's doing. And we thought to ourselves, this is, either he's messing with us, you know, or this is a really good business.
Yeah.
So this is kind of put our, so we're at the house and it was raining, so I told Shirley, let's go look at houses. She's like, what? Why are we going to look at houses? Like, we're here, it's raining, let's just go out of the house, you know? So we just contacted the first one on Google, first realtor on Google, and like, hey, you're going to show us houses. And we went and looked at houses for no reason. We just to entertain. And this is how, and then went home, back home. It was actually kind of happened by, Shirley had to go to school to get the student visa so we can stay in the United States. So she did her master's, and because we're not citizens, we can get student loans. So we had to pay for it in cash, which is a lot of money. And so we had to, we had one house in Atlanta that was ours. So we had to sell it to pay for school. But then we had a chunk of money left, and it was just that time in February, you know, after we came back, and then we like, and then we came here, we found a house, we bought it. We're like, I think, let's do it. Let's try. And it ended up being a phenomenal business. He wasn't messing with us at all. The numbers were very good since the beginning. And then a year after, we said, okay, this is a good business, this is a good deal. A year after, we found another house and we bought it. And then just before we launched, we bought another house, and we're just buying. We just bought our fourth house now.
All in Destin.
All in Destin, just because we think we have a very good formula. And the main challenges, I think, of vacation rentals is the people that help you with them. So we manage it ourselves. We don't use a management company because if you use a management company, most of the time you won't make any money. You won't lose anything, but they will take your profit. So we managed it ourselves, but still finding the right cleaners, a handyman, a plumber, and it was a very challenging thing. And we have a good team now. And we also know you don't need to guess what pricing you need to do or do your research. You don't need to, like, we know exactly what we are facing. So it's also easier for us to buy houses now because we, you know, when I go into a house and I see the rooms and what can be done there, I know exactly how much money it will make. So it's really easy to plug in to how much I should pay for it.
Yeah. So what are like some of those numbers that guy shared with you? If you were looking at buying a house in Destin and it was like $500,000 house, you know, like how much does a house like that need to be making on a short-term rental site like Airbnb in order to make it make sense? Because essentially what you guys are doing is, we talked a little bit before, you're like, I'm working like 2 hours a week, we're traveling, it's a pretty great business and it sounds awesome. And so I'm just thinking, like, if you find an area that works really well, and how do you start like evaluating and looking at a deal to see if the numbers add up? Like, is there?
Yeah, there's a few things. I think there's the easy, you know, when what we know, like the easy numbers is like, if you, let's say you know the area, you live there or whatever, and you know what the long-term renters pay. So you can safely assume a good Airbnb and VRBO house will make 3 to 4 times what a long-term rental brings. So let's say if you rent the house for $1,000 a month, in long-term, you can probably, you know, make 4. Actually, it's not really true. It will make 3 to 4 times the profit, mm-hmm. not the income. It will make the income is much higher. So a good house in Destin, a 3-4 bedroom house that can sleep 12, 14, 16 people like ours will make north of $100,000 in income. And then you will probably make 30, 35, 40% in profit. That's real after mortgage, after everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the general numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I think to calculate how much can be done, that what we do is we use hotel rooms. So instead of saying it's a 3-bedroom or 4-bedroom, it doesn't matter. It's how many hotel rooms you can sleep in this house comfortably, because you don't want to jam-pack people.
So basically, yeah. Just thinking of each room in the house like a hotel room would be.
Yes, or even as a general number. So if you say, okay, this house, I can sleep 14 people. 14 people is safely 3.5 or at least 3 hotel rooms. If
they're pretty packed, right?
Like, yeah, those are if the same 14 people say, okay, we want to go on vacation, they will probably have to buy 3-4 hotel rooms.
Yeah.
To book.
If their families, probably, right?
If their families, even a group of guys, even like 12 guys want to go for a golf trip.
Right.
So even if you want to share a room, even 4 of you share a room, which is kind of, then you still have to have 3 rooms.
Right.
Right. And then usually it's going to be 4 or 5 bedrooms, rooms. So, and hotels are very, very good in pricing. Hotels is one of the ancient, the most, you know, the oldest industries in the world. And it's super sophisticated. Every hotel is pricing usually to the minute. So you can look for a hotel right now and go half an hour from now and it will be a different price. And then different price half an hour later. And so they know what they're doing. So if you say, okay, this house can be 3 hotel rooms, and you go to your area and you go to a comparable hotel. So obviously if your house is super, super fancy, you want to go for find a fancy hotel. But if your house is average and you go for the average hotel and you look at their prices, and then you see, let's say on average in the summer, they will charge $200 a night. So you safely probably can charge $600 a night in summer, probably even more. So that's, you know, you put down all those numbers and then cleaning fee. We charge cleaning fee on top of our rates. So mm-hmm. if you do your rates correctly, and then everything else is a fee, you will make money.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, how much the cleaners charge us plus the laundry service, for example, we put into a cleaning fee, and we charge it on top of your rates. So your rates fluctuate, but this is your thing. So you always charge them. So there's no problem with that. So it doesn't matter. So people like ask me a lot. So how much is, you know, I want to calculate how much is cleaning, how much is, it doesn't matter because you charge for cleaning. So if your house is extremely busy, still people pay for cleaning. Mm-hmm. If your house is not very busy, the cleaning was taken care of.
Do you aim for a little bit of margin on the cleaning?
No.
No.
We make sure we do our profit in the pricing. Mm-hmm. And then cleaning is exactly how much the cleaners charges.
And do you bump up rates during like summer months here
obviously,
in Destin?
Yeah. We are relatively sophisticated owners. We change our prices. We use automation software for pricing, but we also, I will manually go and help the software when I know, you know, I know my rates, I know my crowd. So if I see I'm, you know, almost really booked at summer, I'll go and I'll put another $100, no problem, to the price, because it will book.
Do you have a distribution on multiple channels? Like, do you use like not just Airbnb, but also like VRBO?
We do VRBO HomeAway, which is the same thing.
Yeah. And do you are you signed up on all those different platforms? Or are you using like a Guestify, like channel manager to like distribute out and all
that?
We
don't use channel managers for a couple reasons. First, again, every percent you give to someone else doesn't go to you. And in general, it's not very hard to list yourself.
Right.
So on Airbnb, and we tried a lot of them. We do 99% of our business from Airbnb and VRBO. VRBO, when I say VRBO, is VRBO, all the group, HomeAway, VacationRentals.com, because it's one group. And then we tried listing in other places, whatever, and it's okay, but I'm not sure it's, for us, it's not worth the hassle of more work. And the cost involved, because you have to keep your rates now in three places, four places. So between Airbnb and VRBO, it's very easy for us to control it. So I think it's better to have the correct pricing and strategies in place in fewer places than being in more places.
Yeah.
Because right now, I think most people will go VRBO or Airbnb to place for, you know,
for sure,
vacation. And then if you go this booking.com and all this other places that are more hotels oriented,
right,
their systems are not good for vacation rentals. So they're not friendly to manage. They
take
complex.
Like 10 to 15% off the top usually.
Yeah, they take, 15%, like booking.com will take 15% off the top. They don't allow you to cancel for any reason. And the bottom line, people that look for a vacation house don't go to booking.com.
Right, for sure.
It's not, the brand is not there. Maybe in the future they'll make better, branding for that, but it's not. Airbnb and VRBO are now phenomenal brands in that space. They can highly improve their systems as well. And, they're not perfect. But I think it's better to be very, very, very good at few places. Those, who brings a lot of traffic, than just put yourself everywhere and then be out of control. Like, you don't know where calendars are. You don't know your rates.
Right.
You don't, like, suddenly you forgot to update some website and suddenly, boom, somebody booked a week half price. And so you lost $2,000-$3,000. So the whole other bookings wasn't even worth it from that website.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense. So you guys bought this first place in Destin, and I know there's a few software companies out there that will kind of like pull all the aggregate bookings from like Airbnb and VRBO for a geographic area and tell you like what the demand is. Did you do any of that, or just like talk to this guy and be like, well, we like Destin and I think we can make it work?
Yeah. The second option. I'm very risk averse person. So for me, I see something that is marginally can be a good business.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Let's try it. I didn't see a high risk for it. You ran the number and it was 2014. So we didn't pay a lot for the first house we bought. The numbers for me, because we had a couple rentals at that point, long term. So I bought a house and in the thinking that even if it's not a great vacation business, it will be okay. It's real estate. We're going to put the renters in. It's going to pay the bills. It's not like I didn't say, oh, it's going to be a catastrophe. And this is where it comes to play in real estate, in my opinion, that you have to buy where you're comfortable. Because, it doesn't matter if it's an amazing house, but if it's $700,000 or $800,000 and you don't have that kind of money, or it's going to be super heavy on your soul or on your wallet or your bank account, then you shouldn't do it. You should do something that is comfortable for you. And this is what my strategy in real estate. We tried to buy, even now, the last house we bought, the worst house in the neighborhood. And we'll make it nice. And it's small, but we paid half the money, half the price that you'd pay now in that neighborhood. But I know it will make good money. So, because I don't want to, I believe in leverage. So I'll take loans any day. Money is kind of cheap right now, but it also has to be responsible. You have to be, every loan as relations to, the collateral has to make sense.
Yeah. So after you bought your first place, you guys, how long did it take? Because that's something that we've been trying to figure out too, because we went again in the campground space, but also it's like we have a savings that we're kind of like looking at. We put money in our Roths and stuff like that, so we're like savings, but then we're also thinking like, well, we've got some money, should we just like go out and buy some rental property? We're interested in real estate, or should we just kind of wait until we get into the campground and make that the first thing, so we're kind of focused? And that's kind of where we're leaning at this point. But from like a getting the processes up and running to finding like a plumber or a handyman and things like that, so that when you guys are out traveling, like you're not stressed about that kind of stuff. Like, how long did that take to find those people? And how did you like actually vet them? Did you just go on Google and search like handyman and Destin and just like,
unfortunately the vetting process is, you live and learn.
Yeah.
But well, when we first started, then, you know, when I bought the first house, I actually contacted that guy that talked to me about it, and he was very nice and like, hey, like, who do you use for cleaning and, you know, whatever. And he said, yeah, those people. And we started with that. And then, in the beginning, if I had, you know, anything, I needed anything, I just, did Google and like whoever can show up, fine. And with time, we learned how to, you know, we found the good people, and we also replace people all the time. Unfortunately, some people don't stay great for a long time. But we learned that the most important thing for us, at least, because we're on top of it, we manage it. It's two things. First, we learned that we need to manage it. Like, I don't just send the dates for my cleaners. You know, the night before, I WhatsApp, you know, hey, remember, I know she remembers, she's very good.
Yeah.
But I still, hey, tomorrow, this house, that house, cleaning, whatever, please check the chairs in the pool. Please let me know if we need more towels, make sure there's no stains. And I do it every time. And she knows that. And it's okay. But we learned that if we don't do it, then after
things
a while,
get
they
dropped.
Kind of sleep.
Yeah.
And I asked them to send me a couple pictures every time. I don't care much, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that because I don't trust them or anything like that, but just to be on top of stuff. I like, hey, send me a picture of, you know, the TV area, because I want to see there's no like loose HDMIs and stuff like that. Little thing that people,
right,
that the cleaners don't notice. Or send me a picture of the pool, and I don't care about the pool. I want to see that the landscaping is still nice, and I don't need, you know, and the guy that actually I pay to take care of the yard actually doing his job.
Right.
Because we learned that if we don't do it, then we come every couple, you know, every 6 months we come here, and suddenly there's so many things that are wrong, and we don't want to get to that point.
Right.
And we also learned now I care more about your communication ability than your skills. So if you're an average plumber that is very good at texting, I prefer you on a guy that is the best plumber in the world, but I don't hear from you. You don't text. You don't send me pictures. I don't know what's going on ever, because it's a communication business. Because if I have a problem with the guests, I need to know that you're on your way, because I need to tell the guests. I know you're a plumber. It's not your, you don't think about it. That's fine. But this is why I ask you to like, hey, when you are an hour away, let me know. Because it's not because I want to know, it's because I want to be a good host and text my guests, say, hey, plumber is an hour away, you don't have to be in the house, I'll give him his code or whatever. Or just so they feel they know what's going on.
Right.
So yeah, they had a problem, they had a clogged toilet or whatever, but they at least someone is dealing with it. And it's not like they're, you know, just taking a shower right now and suddenly a guy that say, hey, I'm the plumber, came.
Right.
Because, you know, think of it, if you're on vacation, how do you feel as a guest? It's like, yeah, I fixed your problem, but it wasn't a very good way to fix it.
Right.
It wasn't, communication is lacking, or it caught you by surprise, or not a good time, or whatever. So we now only deal with people who can communicate, vendors or...
Yeah, so I'm assuming with three houses, I know you have four now, there's a lot of... How often do things actually go wrong? on a property?
Not very often, surprisingly. Really? So that's what what's prompted to go and actually go into this after the first house is we were surprised how little issues we have. Or I'd say little issues that are you have to deal with them really. Yeah, you know, a clogged toilet, for example, it's not a big deal. It happens at home as well. And as long as I can fix it, it's fine. But in 99% of the cases, people just come, have an amazing vacation. They leave the house nice. We hardly have to replace, you know, and we don't have any breakage or big issues like that.
Because most people, like with Airbnb especially, like people have public profiles for review. So they want to be rated well so they can go have other places.
I believe that most people are just good people, just responsible. They realize it's someone's house. And we, by the way, we also do it. We put our picture there and we put a little note about our story and follow our travels on Instagram. And that's because we want people to, you know, we don't want followers or anything like that, because it's not our business. But just because we want people to feel, hey, we know those people, this connection.
Right.
But surprisingly, I'd say we rent a lot for students in spring break. And even then, you know, you hear all those horror stories and, you know, crazy students, whatever. And they are crazy. Like we'll have 4 full garbage cans of beers at the end of the week. But not a lot of damage, not a lot of issues. So yeah, even if one of our neighbor will cause, hey, the kids, you know, just a little bit too loud, we send them a message on Airbnb and they're okay with it.
Yeah.
Like people are just normally fine. And we find that we hardly have to speak with anyone. I think in a year. So we have over 7,000 people going to our houses. Now with the new house, probably going to be 9,000-10,000 people going to our houses a year. Mm-hmm. And I maybe have to speak with one of them, you know, throughout the year. So everything is just text messages, or zero communication, because there's no issue. Like we try to automate everything. So we send them the welcome message, and we already heard all the questions in the world. So we have templates and stuff.
Yeah.
So we have a welcome message, and then we, you know, send them automated emails during the stay.
So what are some of the tools, like whether it's like automated locks that generate codes or software tools that you use that make your life way easier as you guys are doing this from the road?
So both Airbnb and VRBO actually have very good tools for templates and communication. So you just you save your templates. So if someone just put an inquiry in, we just go, this house, it's already there. We send it. It put the dates and their name automatically and all that. So those Airbnb and VRBO actually do it very well for that purpose. And as far as locks, we use Schlage, you know, the one that we can control from our phone. And we have automated templates with the codes and stuff as well on Airbnb. So we don't use any software for that. We do use a software that's called Wheelhouse for pricing. It's the best, it's not the perfect, but it's the best I've found for Airbnb. It's basically do automation of the pricing based
like yield management.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so
yield management, for anybody who doesn't know, is like if you're at 75% occupancy or if you're booking within a certain one, it's a rule set for anybody who's reserving a hotel room or motel room or Airbnb online. So it can say like it rewards you maybe for booking far in advance or short term and things like that.
Yeah. So it has all kind of rules that you can create, or it has automation on it, and it's very sophisticated. So it can, because a lot of other people use it, kind of has other people's data as well, so it can compare. Mm-hmm. And so it gives you suggestions. Usually we know our houses a little bit better, so we'll adjust it, but you adjust it not to the dollar. So you'd say in the summer play between $600 a night and $700 a night, and it will play within that range. you know, according to occupancy, volume search, and other things. Or if it's a weekend or whatever, you can do all kind of...
And what is that one called again?
Wheelhouse.
Wheelhouse, okay.
And the website is usewheelhouse.com.
And it connects with all your accounts?
It connects with Airbnb right now. There's a little bit of annoyance with VRBO HomeAway. You have to have 5 properties or more to get access to their API, which API is the tools you use to communicate directly. Right. So we will have it now, but unfortunately, it cannot push to VRBO at this point. But it's fine. We use what we see over there and kind of manually play with VRBO. Obviously, it's not ideal because we don't do it daily, but I'll do it weekly, twice weekly. And there's another thing that the advantage of using it, and a lot of people don't know that when they do Airbnb and VRBO, is that every time you change your pricing, your description or your title, Airbnb and VRBO will give you a boost in search. So the more times you make changes, even small ones, the better you'll show up in search.
Interesting.
And it's amazing because sometimes we'll do, you know, a title change and then boom, the next 3 days we have booking.
Really? Wow.
So you want to do it. And because a lot of people just say, oh, I'm going to have my listing. It's perfect. And ours are kind of perfect because we already heard all the questions. We tried to really make it like that so people read it, and we took our time. But still, we go in and change stuff, especially titles and some things on the, or every time I get a new question, you know, someone, oh, okay, maybe it wasn't that clear. So then I go in and add something there. But especially titles, sometimes you want to refresh pictures and pricing. So every time you do that, Airbnb said, oh, something new is happening with this property. Let's push it a little bit, see if people like it.
Yeah.
It's not a secret. Right. But a lot of people are not aware of it. There's more and more people that do it now. So obviously has, you know, less and less effective, more people doing it and more automation, but it's still good.
What's something that if somebody was thinking about, like, okay, I maybe have bought real estate but maybe not for Airbnb or short-term rentals, and like one thing that you would say after doing this for a few years, like you would give advice, whether it was like looking at the best property to buy or like from a business side of things with like getting going, like one thing that you would, like one piece of advice that you would share?
I'd say, at least on the first one, you want to buy at a place you know. It's true for long term and short term.
Basically, any real estate, you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Any real estate. You want to, the first one, you know, when you, if you dip your toes in it, or you just, you know, thinking maybe I want to do it, or even short term, try to buy something that first you know the area, and it's not necessarily. Like you just have to say, okay, there's some interesting stuff going on around here. And also, the other thing is buy relatively close to home. I'd say in order to succeed, especially in short-term rentals, in the first year, you want to be there a few times. So, you know, we bought in Destin, it's 6 hours from Atlanta. It's not a big deal. Like, yeah, it's 6 hours. It's not like an hour. But if we thought in our head, if something major happens, go in the car, 6 hours, you're here.
All right.
You know, you can deal with it. And also, the reason I say that is that you want to visit your property a few times a year, especially in the first year, just because you need to know, are your cleaners doing a good job? How the houses, what condition the houses are. You want to fill the area, you know, like there's good restaurants around, there's good events, how's the beach in our case.
And I'm sure people ask those types of questions, so it's good to be able to answer them, yeah.
And by the way, we found right now, we don't just do, we found other channels, revenue channels. For example, we have, because we get all those crazy questions, so we did a nice blog post on, you know, things to do, where to eat and where to shop in Destin, Florida. And we're not in Google or anything like that, but just those thousands of people every year, we send them like, hey, here's a blog post, and we do it for them. So you have a list of restaurants and places and stuff, and also activities. And we have affiliate links in it, obviously. So it's nice for the guests because they get a list of really good stuff. And we, and another thing is we did everything on our blog, on whatever is there. We tried it. So we went to the restaurants we like, on the fishing trip that we did, or the, you know, other activities there are there. So it's also gives it credibility, and we know it's fun for the guests.
Yeah. And you guys have been doing like one a year on average, like one new property a year. Yeah. And before this, I think we didn't really talk about it too much, but you were like flipping houses. So you had experience, like at least in buying real estate before getting into this. Which I'm assuming helped a ton.
Yeah, it did. And but I think in real estate, you don't have to be you don't have to have a lot of experience in real estate. You just have to be smart with any investment, anything you buy. You want to make sure you buy, I call it a good deal. So you want to make sure you're not overpaying and you're not getting excited. And a lot of problems, and we have some friends like that, actually, that have vacation rentals here. They're not making, they're not as successful as us. And the reason is they bought their houses because they were excited about a beach house. And, but if you think about it as a business from the get-go, you'll probably be more successful. Because yes, there are houses that you go and like, man, I could live here. That's amazing. But is it a good business? Not so much, you know. Buy the house next door, which is $100,000 less. It's not your dream beach house, but you'll make more money out of it. Or they, you know, we have people that they buy properties here that are very fancy. And then they just worried all the time. They won't rent for students in spring break, and we'll probably make, you know, $20,000 more than them just on spring break. But they like, no, it's, you're under 25. We don't rent for you. And we know that we do it. We rent everyone. We just base, we say we rent for any responsible group, and we had hardly have any issues in 6 years. So like, what do you have to worry if it's a business, you know? So you need to replace a sofa. $800, you know. So you don't want to put a $30,000-$40,000 income because you're worried about you have to replace a sofa once in a while,
right?
You have to paint the wall, you have to, it's, so if you look at the cost that might, a damage can happen, it's relatively to the business, it's nothing.
Yeah.
So but if you feel like it's your house, it's your own house, or it's so nice, then you know, you're worried all the time, and you don't allow pets, you don't allow students, all kind of stuff. So so you lose money. You lose money, lose options. We do a lot of money on pet fees, which is, you know, pool heating fees. A lot of people say, oh, I don't want to heat the pool, it's a hassle. It's $3,000 to heat the pool, and then you make
way more money, So the last question I have for you is, you guys are all traveling now, and you're managing this Airbnb short-term rental business from the road. Like, what's the biggest thing that you feel like you've learned in the past year, whether it relates to this business or just in general?
I think a few things. First of all, we learned that people are wonderful. Like, we met so many wonderful people from all walks of life. I think that if you don't travel, there's no reason for you to leave.
Tell us how you really felt. No,
but if the thing is, you just, it opens your mind. You know, you go, you meet people, you see places, everything you hear, you think you know about America, whatever. It's shatters. It's different. It's you like, man, I really,
you realize you have an opinion on something without actually experiencing it, right?
So it's just, I think it's just great. And what we learned about, you know, having that business is that, first of all, it can be done, because we were worried beginning, because when we lived in Atlanta, we're here 3, you know, 4 or 5 times a year easy. So we didn't know, you know, what's going to be, but, we're, you know, over a year and a half, on the road, and business is booming. Everything is great. We just came here after not being here 10 months, and it's fine. It works great, but we manage it, you know, more closely, as I said, because we're not here. So we're trying to be more on top. Top the cleaners, the handymen. We'll do a lot of maintenance right now that we haven't done before. So I'll send the HVAC guys three times a year to do just maintenance, you know, because yes, the cleaner is supposed to change the filters in the AC, but I remember more than once that I came here and I changed the filter.
Yeah.
You know, so by putting the HVAC guys in, they'll change the filter. So even if it's every 3 months, it's better than not doing it for 6 months,
right?
10 months. And we have plumbers that they'll just drain the main line twice a year because people put whatever stuff in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So again, as I told you before with the pictures and stuff, so we're more on top because we're not here. But it's definitely doable and nice. And but above all, it's just the people you meet on the road. It's just phenomenal. So many families. We haven't realized. We, you know, when we started, we thought about, oh, we're going to be so cool. We're so special. And then you realize there's thousands of people or families even, mm-hmm. tens of thousands of families on the road, let alone the millions of other people. And all of them are wonderful because they did something different. They decided to do it for their own reasons, but they're on the road. They learn to just meet people, talk with people, have fun. And it's just phenomenal. I think it's our kids grew so much in a year and a half. And we do unschooling right now. We don't even do homeschooling. But they learn so much in being with different ages, kids, and meeting people and just be flexible, be outside. You know, back home, nobody's outside. But in RV parks, everybody's outside.
Yeah.
Adults and kids, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You just sit outside. You just go something, do something, and you talk to your neighbor. And yeah, sometimes you become great friends. Sometimes you're not going to see them ever. But it's fun.
Yeah.
It's different.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
Well, is there a good place for people to follow you guys on social media?
Probably in Instagram, Zula Life, Z-U-L-A, Life. Zula is a word in Hebrew that means the place you feel most comfortable. So Zula Life, that's on Instagram, also Facebook, but probably Instagram more thing is. And if you want to look at our Airbnb, if you want to just, you know, contact us, ask questions, or even come, you know, stay with us, it's ZulaBeach.com.
I love it, man. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode with Arez. If you enjoyed this episode and other ones on this podcast, it would be amazing if you left a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to this podcast, because those are really the lifeblood of podcasts. And that's what people look at before they decide to put it in their AirPods and listen to an episode. So if you haven't left a review for the show, it would mean the world to me if you did. Hope wherever you are, you're having an amazing day, and I'll see you next time on the RV Entrepreneur Podcast.